Vietnam, the old and the new. In this part of All Things Considered, I'm Lynn Neary.
This is Alex Chadwick. A special report tonight examines Vietnam's struggles with conditions of peace, as difficult in some ways as those of war.
U.S. involvement in Vietnam ended 13 years ago when South Vietnam, the American ally, was finally defeated.
Now Vietnam is inviting Americans to return. This is All Things Considered. I'm Alex Chadwick.
And I'm Lynn.
For the decade or so that we watched the war on TV, Americans probably knew more about Vietnam than any other country in the world. We knew some of its history, a former French colony, an independence movement led by a communist nationalist called Ho Chi Minh, the country divided, South Vietnam and North, the U.S. propping up the South, first with money, then with men, finally defeated at terrible cost to all, and for Vietnam, reunification.
But after the war, we stopped learning about Vietnam. The country was closed to the West. Now, Vietnam is opening again. But the process is not easy. Indeed, simply getting there is difficult. The U.S. and Vietnam do not have relations, so an American seeking to go must first travel to Vietnam's Asian neighbor Thailand, which is where our story begins.
Bangkok, a way stop on a journey of rediscovery which is about to begin. On a morning in early February, in the courtyard of a temple by a river, I come across a middle-aged man who claims to be the greatest fortune teller in the city. And because the outcome of this journey is uncertain, I ask about the future. He consults some charts, mutters, writes down some figures, and puts his pen aside. "Well," he says, "there are great strains ahead in relations and in work and reputation," he says. "Very great danger to reputation," he says. "And in fact, the prospects are for an immediate decline." I pay the man $4 and go away. The next day, I get on an airplane and fly into Vietnam.
The flight time is 1 hour and 15 minutes.
The first time I went to Vietnam, I flew into the South and went to work in a city that officially doesn't exist anymore. But everything changes. This time the plane went north, and all through the hour and a half flight, the land was obscured by clouds and rain, until at last we passed down through the gloom and emerged near our destination at about 2,000 feet. Immediately I look around for bomb craters, but I can't see any. Instead, the earth below is utterly flat, almost all farmland, broken into parcels, some of them quite small, only a few hundred square feet. The different patches are brown or yellow, or some a fresh green. There are clusters of buildings. Suddenly, the Hanoi airport. The jet zooms across the end of the runway. And out the window, there's a fast glimpse of the old Vietnam, the long barrel of an anti-aircraft gun, draped in camouflage nets and pointed at the sky. We stop. Down on the runway, a soldier wheels a metal staircase to the side of the plane. Almost now. Almost. People gather belongings and stand in the aisle, and the door opens to Vietnam. And it's cold. Startling. I was never cold in Vietnam. The South is always hot. But this is gray and drizzly and cold. The airport building is unheated, dingy. Everything in it looks homemade. Immigration officers hold long conferences over small documents. What if you spent a year of the young part of your life in a strange, exotic place that tasted unlike anything you'd known, and then it was closed off to you, forever, you thought, and then open again? No one looks friendly, but I can recognize some of the words. It's Vietnamese. This really is Vietnam, however grim and unfamiliar. A water bottle carried in my backpack bursts and drains to the floor. Waiting in line to present my passport, I'm dripping, confused, exhilarated.
Thank you.
Loudspeakers mounted on street poles in Hanoi broadcast a morning chime. The streets are empty at dawn, and 15 minutes later, they're crowded. A truck rolls past, sounding the horn to clear the way. Occasionally, there's a car, and there are some motorcycles, but almost anyone with anywhere to go rides a bicycle. Some corners have stoplights, but the lights don't work, and there are no stop signs, and in fact, no one ever stops. A truck might bully its way through, but the bicycles simply flow together at intersections, no direction ever halting for another, but all somehow blending. On foot, it's about 20 minutes from the hotel to some city offices near a lake. Along the way, people are bundled against the cold, but some are barefoot, and some don't have on enough to keep warm. There are cooking fires burning on the streets. Still, maybe the French were thinking of this city when they clung to Vietnam, thinking of the solid colonial buildings or the graceful tree-lined streets. I'd expected bombed rubble in Hanoi. Instead, there's scarcely any evidence of the war. It's beautiful, completely beautiful, and very poor.
Đúng hoàn toàn như ông nói. Đúng như ông nói đó. Chiến tranh xong rồi, chúng tôi nghĩ rằng là chỉ trong 10 năm chúng tôi có thể đưa lại cho nhân dân những cái điều mà đảng đã muốn trong chiến tranh.
The deputy mayor of Hanoi, an economist, at his office in the city building by the lake. He's explaining the new Vietnam.
Cho nên là chúng tôi làm vụ.
After peace was established, we wanted to give the people, within 10 years, all the things that the party had promised them. So we hurried, made mistakes on many things. Now we are very aware how difficult it is to rebuild our country, perhaps more so than fighting or ending a war.
The population grows rapidly in Vietnam, but the economy stagnates. Things aren't working. In Hanoi, the electricity is apt to flicker off in whole sectors of the city and stay off for hours. Schools are crowded. Students go in shifts. School buildings are unrepaired. People say openly they don't have enough money and can't earn enough by legal means. A question of money and legality arises immediately for any visitor. The Vietnamese currency is called the dong. You can convert dollars to dong at any government exchange at the official rate. But it's easy to do much better. In any neighborhood in downtown Hanoi, through the front room of a shop and down a dim corridor, shopkeepers pursue a second line of work in a back room, currency trading.
Can we change all our money?
Yes, please.
How much, what's the rate these days?
1,026.
1,026?
Yes.
Maybe change, $80?
Yes, okay.
On the black market, the price of a dollar changes from day to day, but it's always 3.5 or 4 times the government rate, and the opportunity to quadruple their money is something very few foreigners pass up.
100,800.
How much?
100,800.
So the rate is how much?
126.
Yes. It's not legal, but it's so widely practiced that no one even attempts much of a disguise. If the government really wanted to stop it, it could. But the dollars would disappear into hiding, and the dong would be hoarded, and getting tough wouldn't be much good for anyone. Harsh, useless lessons are frowned on now. They're outdated, consigned to the old Vietnam. The new Vietnam is nowhere better displayed than at Hanoi's Central Market. The indoor part is a huge, cavernous space, dimly lit again. There aren't any bright lights in Vietnam, but it's jammed with people on a Saturday morning. Some of the counters and shelves here belong to state-run or government stores, but there's not much worth buying there. And the shoppers are going elsewhere, to private stalls that are loaded with goods.
How long have you had your shop here?
It's been 5 months already.
5 months. What made you start? How did you get started?
The government says it's okay for the people to open shops now.
This woman's in business for herself, selling fabric from a countertop covered with bolts of cloth. She buys the material from local village cooperatives whose members work extra hours to earn more money. The merchant is then free to set her own price and keep her profits, though she's heavily taxed.
Were you ever in business